EHPR's The Exchange podcast is brought to you in part by Granite State College, Keene State College, Plymouth State University, and the University of New Hampshire. This is your university system. Visit usnh.edu/yours to learn more.
The Exchange podcast also gets support from the New Hampshire Chiropractic Association, an organization of professionals providing a non-invasive, non-surgical approach to healthcare, tailoring treatment plans to meet individuals' needs. Learn more at nhchiropractic.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Americans say they're ready to hit the road this summer, and travel industry experts predict a strong domestic vacation season. They credit the protection people feel from vaccinations, uncertainty around travel to international destinations, and just plain old pent-up demand. Today in The Exchange, summer travel. Are you planning to get away this year? How are you going about it differently? What questions do you have? Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And our phone number is 800-892-6477. Our guests are Matt Fox. He's a professor of epidemiology at the Boston University School of Public Health. Matt, welcome back. Great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us, Andrea Sachs, a travel reporter for The Washington Post. Welcome, Andrea. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
And also with us, Ian Aldrich. He's senior features editor at Yankee Magazine. And Ian, really nice to have you too. Thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, Andrea, I keep reading about pent-up travel demand. How pent-up is it?
Oh my gosh, it's exploding. TSA has now been recording 1.7 million people a day for a couple since May. They've been seeing their highest numbers yet. And like at the lowest point, it was like 87,000 people a day coming through screening. So we're just going to see those. They're not as high, obviously, as 2019 when it was over 2 million, but they're creeping up. And then AAA for Memorial Weekend is expecting really high numbers as well.
Wow. So TSA, 1.7 million people flying, and then AAA, which has a pretty good track record looking at road trips, says they expect a lot of people. Wow. So what are your readers, Andrea, sort of, how are they describing this pent-up demand?
There are two camps. They're asking about Europe. They can't wait for Europe to open. And others are a little more cautious, and they want to know maybe trips that are within 3-4 hour drive of wherever they're living. They want to still stick outdoors. They want to see family members. And then, but then there are the others who are like, I want to go party and I have all this pent up energy. I feel like a lot of people are, what they're going to do will be more cautious. What they're going to dream about maybe for the second half of the year will be a big trip, or even for 2022, they'll do the big trip.
Wow. So, and when we bring Matt in, we'll definitely talk about some of the precautions that people are taking. Just for today's purposes, we're not really going to focus on international travel because, as you said, Andrea, it's so uncertain and the rules seem to be always changing. So we're going to focus this hour just on this domestic travel boom that everybody is expecting this summer. And Ian, what's the word in New England about the urge that, you know, your readers have to travel?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a lot of what Andrea's echoed. You know, I've been fortunate to travel a little bit just in the last few weeks, just for work myself. And I sort of equated to like when I got my driver's license, when I grew up in rural New England and I drove off in the family car for the first time and the world felt large and exciting again. And I think that's what we're all going to feel when we get to travel. And I talked to some hotel owners and restaurant owners, and they're all really bullish about the season. I think they're bullish about New Englanders traveling within the region, but also people coming to the region. I think we've seen this before, you know, in times of when we've come out of a crisis, New England has sort of been a kind of a focus point for travelers. They've kind of wanted to come back to something familiar, something that, just makes them feel comfortable. And I think New England does that. And so I think we're going to see that again.
So here's an email from Jan, who shared how she's feeling about travel. And Matt, I'm going to throw this to you. Jan says, I've already taken my first trip post-vaccine. Members of my family in another state are also vaccinated. And I went to visit them last week for the first time since 2019. being on a full airplane after avoiding crowded spaces for so long felt risky. But other than that, it was a wonderful reunion. Jan says, I'm heading to New York City for a few days in June. I'm still not 100% confident that travel is safe. We all increase the chances of exposure and contracting COVID when we are in crowded situations like buses, airplanes, restaurants, even after our vaccinations. So Matt, you know, there's Jan, she's out, she's doing it, but she's got some concerns, and I wonder what you think.
I think that Jan's feelings are completely relatable and understandable. I have very similar feelings. I took my first trip recently on an airplane, and I'm fully vaccinated. And as an epidemiologist, I know that means I'm at very, very low risk of getting infected or getting severe illness. But I still, you know, we've been living with the anxiety of seeing large numbers of people sick and dying for over a year now. And that takes its toll. But I do think we want to keep in mind that for a vaccinated person, the risk is really low. It's not zero. We have to always remember that the vaccine is not 100% effective, but the risk is really low. And as the number of cases starts to come down concurrent with being vaccinated, the risk becomes even lower. So, you know, we want to get back to a lot of the things that we really enjoy. We want to do that safely. So I think the key is to trust the vaccines, but also minimize the amount of time we're spending indoors with you know, large crowds of people.
Well, yeah. So talk a little bit more about that, Matt, please. What kinds of considerations should people weigh as they go about making plans? You know, beyond the obvious of, you know, wearing a mask on the plane.
Yeah, so the thing to think about is that there's no way to know who around you is vaccinated. So you might be fully vaccinated and you feel very confident in the protection, but you don't know who around you is vaccinated. And as we said, the risk to you is low, but it's not zero. And you wanna contribute to further reducing the transmission. So I think what you wanna think about is, as you plan that summer trip, how can you minimize the amount of time that you spend indoors? We have that craving to be around other people, and that's natural and understandable, but the more of that you can do outdoors, the lower the risk is. Even for those who are unvaccinated, the risk outdoors is quite low. And so just really trying to maximize that time. Obviously, when you're traveling in an airplane, you can't minimize that time. And so then obviously, yes, you're keeping your mask on, but you're also just, you know, trusting that the vaccines are doing their job and trying to avoid those crowded spaces as much as possible.
Andrea, how much have vaccines just kind of been a game changer for your readers in terms of, you know, their willingness to get on the road?
Oh, incredibly. If I may just add about the mask, fortunately, all the transportation hubs, so we have airlines and train stations and trains, they're all sticking with the mask mandate through September at least. So that's comforting to know that will be enforced, because I know, you know, there's a lot of confusion about the CDC's newest comments about the mask. But the vaccination has been so freeing to people. Like, now they're really thinking about travel. I think every sentence starts with, I've been vaccinated. I've had my second vaccine. It's been 2 weeks since my last vaccine. I'm ready to go. So before they were like, when I get vaccinated, and now it's, I've been vaccinated and I'm booking.
So repeat what you just said, Andrea. That's really important, because you're right. Well, we're getting used to pets in the background, so don't worry.
I'm so sorry. I took the spooky toy away.
Pets, children, we've heard it all. No worries. So the CDC did, you know, surprise a lot of people, including, I think, some within the Biden administration last week when it said, hey, fully vaccinated people, you can take those masks off. But from what you're hearing, Andrea, from, you know, major travel hubs, they're saying, no, keep it on for now.
Correct. Yes. So the airlines, airports, trains, train stations, buses will all require masks.
Okay.
And that's so federal. So that's comforting. So I know with the CDC's latest announcement about vaccinated people don't have to wear masks outside and indoors in small groups, the transportation industry is saying, no, we're sticking with the masks.
Okay.
And so they can enforce it, which is great, because now it falls to individual businesses that have to decide whether to allow people in or not. but
yeah, we've heard from individual businesses that it's tricky for them to have different rules than the state or the town or the federal government. So that's a blanket rule from the federal government.
They want to have everyone come in and they can't, they have to choose one side or the other. But this way, the decision is made for the airlines, and I think that's good because they did in the beginning. It wasn't that the case. Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay, the bone's going away.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to remind listeners that they can call us while you take care of that, Andrea. No problem. We're talking about summer travel today in the Exchange, and let's hear from you. How are you thinking about getting away this year? If you're thinking about getting away this summer, how is that different from before the pandemic? We're talking about the expected domestic summer travel boom today in the Exchange, and we'd love to hear your comments, experiences, and questions. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org, or give us a call at 800-892-6477. So Andrea, Matt, Ian, let's go right to our listeners. And Robin's calling from Wilton. Hi, Robin, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hello, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that last year, I had plans to go to Quebec City in April, which obviously didn't happen. And so by the time summer rolled around, I was really anxious to get away. So I felt the safest way to get away would be to find some charming New England inns that had very small room amounts, 11 to 15 rooms. And I was able to find three last year. They had full-service restaurants, very lovely surroundings, and they literally saved my life and my companion's life. And this year, now that we're both vaccinated, we're planning to go. We want to be around more people because we were playing very safe last year. But this year, we're going up to the Mount Washington Resort because we would like to be in a big, beautiful place with a lot of people around. So we're so thankful that we're where we are. But last year, those small, charming inns.
Well, Robin, it's great to hear from you. And got an email from Art, which kind of also reminds me of what you said. Art says, my wife and I run a small cabin business in the state, and we had a record year last year in spite of COVID. This year is looking to be as busy, if not busier. So Ian, you know, anecdotally, I have heard the same thing that Robin and Art say, that here in New England, the small places, especially the places with separate cabins, so you're not sharing, you know, lobby space, those places did unbelievably well last year, and campgrounds too.
Yeah, they did. And I think they're expecting another banner year this year. I mean, we've seen just in our travel searches online, there's a lot of interest in, you know, that sort of activity being sort of reconnecting with the outdoors or enhancing the relationship that they established with the outdoors last summer. I will tell Robin that she will have a fantastic time at the Omni Mount Washington Resort. I think what we remember is that before COVID hit, the economy was strong and a lot of businesses were expanding, making changes, and then they had to sort of suspend operations or suspend what they were doing. And the case of the Omni, they've opened up a new wing, they've opened up a new lodge at the top of Bretton Woods. So they're expecting more business, but they're also sort of being able to tap into some of the changes that were being put in place prior to COVID hitting and that they weren't able to kind of showcase until now. So that's exciting.
Yeah, well, and city versus country, and it does seem like a lot of people are choosing the outdoors because, as Matt said, you know, it's still safer. Andrea, Airbnb says bookings for its more remote destinations are way, way up over its city bookings. What are you hearing, Andrea? What's your sense of city versus country this year?
Absolutely. And just to add to that, VRBO also had a study where their cabins and chalets were off the charts, just so popular. And really kind of rustic destinations, Emory, Texas, well, a lot of places I haven't been to, Slade, Kentucky, Smithville, Missouri, Outer Banks, which I have been to and I love, Manford, Oklahoma are some of their top destinations.
Manford, so Oklahoma.
I know, we all need to go to Oklahoma. Whereas, you know, before pandemic, it was Orlando, Las Vegas, Nashville. So I do think people really want to get outdoors. They're hitting national parks more than ever, actually maybe too much more than ever. So it's important to maybe look at some smaller ones, look at state parks, look at some of the national forests, things of that sort, rather than the big national parks. And then we have a new one in our area, which is New River Gorge in West Virginia. And that one's beautiful, especially if you enjoy rafting or rock climbing. So maybe, you know, give the latest one some love. But people are definitely trying to get outdoors. I know near New Hampshire, there's a company called Getaway, and they do tiny houses 2 hours from urban destinations. So they market toward the Boston crowd, but their little tiny cabins are in New Hampshire, which is great for your listeners. And then we have one that's in Virginia for the DC market. And they're They're really cute. They're still contained. You still see people, but they position them so you still have a lot of privacy.
Well, last year, the complaint that we heard from our Lakes region and the White Mountains region especially was too many people, because everybody was seeking, you know, those experiences. And Matt, you know, given that some popular outdoor areas like national parks, as Andrea said, are filling up, I mean, how should folks approach those, you know, those areas like the Grand Canyon, like Yellowstone, if, you know, that's where they really want to go and they're going anyway?
Yeah, I'm still supportive of if people want to go to places where there's, you know, going to be a lot of people around. I'm still supportive of that. I think that the key is you just want to take the precautions that you can to keep yourself safe. So obviously being fully vaccinated, waiting until you're able to get your vaccine and 10 days after that, you know, taking, you know, wearing masks if you're going to be around a lot of people. But again, if you can be in those, you know, places where you can go out and hike and enjoy the outdoors, even if there are lots of other people around, that's perfectly okay for vaccinated people. And, you know, we have this, you know, human need for connection with people, even people that we don't know that we have been forgoing for so long. I think that this is going to be a summer where people really get a chance to reconnect with some of the things that bring them joy. We don't want to take that away from people. We just want to, you know, ask people to do it as responsibly as they can, keeping in mind that even if you are vaccinated, there is still some small chance that you can get infected and pass it on. But also keep in mind that there are other people who, for medical reasons or age reasons, can't get vaccinated, and we want to protect them as well.
Let's take another call. This is John in Nashua. Hi, John. You're in the Exchange. Go ahead.
Hey, my comment actually relates very closely to what your guest just expressed. So my vacation travel this year is probably going to be dramatically less social than it was last year, which was already pretty isolated, specifically because of the age-related restrictions. So NPR did a report a couple days ago about the massive Yankees outbreak, where 8 of their completely vaccinated players got COVID on the trip down to Florida. And but the positive takeaway of that was that 7 out of 8 of them were asymptomatic because of the vaccinations. The illness was reduced for them. But I'm a parent. My kids aren't allowed to be vaccinated yet. The number of new cases per day is already right now twice what it was last year at this time. And now we're going to invite all sorts of people into our state to bike week, like as though that worked well for Sturgis last year. People are going to be sneezing on each other and spreading COVID much faster. There will be more asymptomatic cases. Even the conscientious visitors won't know that they're infected because they're asymptomatic. And my kids are going to walk through that defenseless.
Wow. So what are you going to do? We'll definitely address your frustrations, John. But what are you going to do for summer vacation, if anything? Are you going to staycation it?
Well, I'll be staycationing for sure. And doing is, you know, the kids are out of, or, you know, they're out of school now, but they'll be, you know, without school work. So I'll try to entertain them as much as possible. Probably, you know, keep them entertained in the yard will take up a lot of my time. Maybe try to find a secluded spot on a beach somewhere, or jump on a boat and drive to the middle of the ocean where we can be completely alone from everybody spreading the disease around.
Wow. I'm really glad you called, John. And, you know, luckily we live in New Hampshire, so there are a lot of great places to go where you will not be in large crowds of people. There's so much to unpack from John's call. First of all, I think, Matt, he addressed Bike Week here in New Hampshire. That is a large gathering. It is going to go on. And he's right, not everybody can be vaccinated, kids, people with certain health conditions. So what are the considerations there for not just, you know, John, obviously he's not going to go to Bike Week, but are big events like that, you know, a risk for we who live here in the Granite State?
Yeah, so I want to say I really appreciate those comments, and I can relate to those concerns. It is absolutely true that kids, particularly under kids under 12, can't get vaccinated yet, and so that's a population that can still get infected. The risk population-wide, I can't speak to anyone's specific situation, but population-wide, the risk to young children is very low, but it's not zero. And if people are not comfortable putting their kids in situations where they potentially could be exposed, that is something that people should be very comfortable keeping themselves away from. I do think, though, that it's important to note the caller raised the issue of the transmission that happened amongst a vaccinated population, the Yankees. You know, it's worth remembering that cases like that are rare. They make the news because they are, you know, something that is concerning to us, people who have been fully vaccinated getting infected. But we want to keep in mind that those situations are rare. And as the caller says, they were all, you know, they were mild infection because they had been vaccinated, presumably. So so to answer the question, those large, you know, gatherings, you know, wouldn't be my preference. It's not where I'm going to go. But I do think you want to just keep in mind that while cases are not probably as low as we'd want them to be, it is worth noting that mortality and hospitalizations are coming down faster than cases are. So cases aren't going away exactly, but severe illnesses. And that's because we vaccinated so many of those over 65, those who are at most risk from the severe illness. At some point, you know, we are going to come to a point where we're willing to engage in the activities we engaged in before, even though there is still some risk for everyone. What that level of tolerance is going to be different.
Well, and here's another sort of statistical epidemiology question for you, Matt. You know, John mentioned Bike Week, and yes, that's a large gathering. However, much of it occurs outdoors, right? People riding their, you know, motorcycles up and down Weir's Beach in that area, and there are tents outside. And so what do we know now about outdoors transmission? I've been reading it's even lower than what the CDC has said.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier the CDC change in guidelines was confusing to people, particularly there were two different changes that sort of happened. I guess if I had my way, the change that I would have made would have been that everybody continues to wear masks indoors, but that outdoors, people could stop wearing masks, even those who are unvaccinated, because the risk of transmission outdoors is incredibly low. You know, I can understand why they didn't want to make that change. But to me, the outdoors is a completely different situation from indoors. I think the issue that's worth remembering with something like the bike rally is that when people congregate outdoors, they also tend to congregate indoors, even if not for long periods of time. And that's where the transmission tends to happen. So it isn't the outdoor events that we're worried about. It's that when people congregate in large groups, they also tend to stay in, you know, big hotels or you know, places where they're going to congregate indoors as well. And that's where the risk is. So outdoors, I think, you know, I'm very comfortable being in gatherings outdoors. I still want to, you know, maintain social distancing because I don't know who's vaccinated and who isn't, but outdoors is a much safer option than indoors.
So Ian, you know, I'm hearing frustration in John's voice. He doesn't want to go to crowded places. His kids aren't vaccinated. What sort of general ideas can you give him, Ian, for, you know, quiet places for John and his kids to go in New Hampshire or New England?
Yeah, well, I can't remember if John said how old his kids are, but excuse me, last August.
Too young to be vaccinated. So yeah, under 12.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But there's a great ride I did that I wrote about actually for our current May-June travel issue. It's called the Cross New Hampshire Adventure Trail. It's this 83-mile journey, which sounds like it's not very accessible, but it's very easy riding. You bike and camp. You can take your time. You can do segments. It runs from Woodsville, New Hampshire to Bethel, Maine. And you're just on dirt roads and rail trails, and you're kind of riding in the shadow of the Presidential Range. And in a couple of weeks, you'll be riding through sort of the big Lupin fields and You're not going to be around a lot of people. You're going to be in small towns, and then you can just camp along the way. It's stunning. And even if you think you know New Hampshire, you ride this trail and you sort of see it in a completely different way. There's also just a lot of, a lot of great state parks. Just over the border in Lee, Massachusetts, so it's still not far from John, is October Mountain State Forest.
And that's like a great,
it's sort of this, we did this whole package called Under the Radar State Parks, and this was one of the stars of it because it sits in these high plateaus. So on like really sort of dog days of summer, it's easy to cool off. There's great fishing and great wildlife. The Appalachian Trail is sort of about a 9 mile segment runs through it. So you can go home and brag to your friends that you've done a portion of the AT. So you can get some cred there.
So under the radar state parks. Yeah, go ahead.
Under the radar state parks. So there's a great one in New Hampshire. We have one up in Dixville Notch. I mean, we hear Dixville every 4 years because first in the nation voting, but it's got this great little state park that is great for cycling and hiking and things like that. It's a trek to get there, but once you're there, it's really worth it.
Yeah, one of my less well-known favorite state parks is Moose Brook State Park up in Gorham.
Of course,
That's another one where, just not that many people seem to go there, and it's really lovely. Well, John, good luck to you, and thank you very much for calling today. And all of you, we have to take a very short break. When we come back, we'll talk about how big cities are trying to reach out to potential travelers too, and also just how the travel industry is looking at this summer. All that's coming up. Keep your emails coming in as well. It's exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, what U.S. summer travel might be like this year. Many Americans say with vaccinations rising, they are ready to get out of town. So we're looking at where they're going and how they're doing it. And let's hear from you. Are you planning to travel this summer? Where do you want to go and why? How are you approaching your travel differently than in years past? Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call 800-892-6477. We're talking with Matt Fox, professor of epidemiology at the Boston University School of Public Health. Also, Andrea Sachs, Washington Post travel reporter, and Ian Aldrich, senior features editor at Yankee Magazine. One more time, that number, 800-892-6477. So, Andrea, given this sort of preference that people have for the outdoors, for the remote, for the country versus the city, I've heard that the big cities are trying to say, hey, you can come visit, visit us too. What kind of pitches to potential travelers are the cities making, Andrea?
Well, New York City is the biggest one because they were so cautious. They were requiring COVID tests and quarantines. And on Wednesday, they're lifting all restrictions. I was supposed to go to New York City last week to write about restrictions. And now I'm going this week to write about New York City without restrictions. So it's changing so quickly, and I think that they are trying to encourage people to stay outdoors. They're still limiting, at least for New York City, but they're still limiting capacity. Museums are still requiring reservations in advance. So they're welcoming people, but cautiously. And I think a lot of the cities are doing that, but they definitely want people back. I think it's great that we are going through the vaccination and new mask rules during the summertime when we can be outdoors more. I think with the wintertime, it would be really hard to go through this. So there's a lot of comfort knowing that we can be outside. You can always rent a bike, you can rent a boat, you can kayak and, get a little rowboat in Central Park. So I think that the cities are really trying to find that balance to encourage people to come, but not worry them.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. Last time I was in D.C., and it was a while ago, we rented bikes, and it was so fun just biking around to all the different national monuments and stuff. So, Matt, how would you approach this if you were to travel to a big American city? It's a little different than, coming to New Hampshire.
Well, I should say that I actually have. I had the first trip since March of 2020. It was to New Orleans, and we... I took as many precautions as I could. I was fully vaccinated, but I still wanted to ensure that I was doing my part not to expose anyone? Should I be unfortunately infected? And so the, I think the, one of the things that you want to do is when you're planning out that vacation, if you're going to be in a city, is think about what the opportunities you have to be outdoors are. One of the positives I think that has come out of the pandemic, it's one of the few, is that cities and towns are relaxing, have relaxed regulations around outdoor dining, have added space for outdoor dining, you know, reduced traffic in areas to support outdoor dining. And I think that's something you want to really take advantage of. It's really fantastic. And, you know, it does fill up quickly, so you want to plan ahead for that. But I think, you know, eating is one of the more risky indoor activities that we can do. So if you can do that outdoors, you're further going to cut down your risk. In terms of other things, I would just think about, you know, minimizing those, you know, large crowded indoor spaces. So, you know, if you are comfortable going to a museum, which is something that I'm not ready to do yet, but if you are, think about minimizing your time there and trying to keep your distance from people as much as possible while wearing your mask.
Again, our number is 800-892-6477. And our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Ian, Matt mentioned eating and eating out. And certainly when people go on vacation, they like to go out to eat. What innovations have you seen among New England restaurants in terms of accommodating this desire to eat outside? Just here in New Hampshire, I've seen tons of creativity, but I'd love to hear from you on that, Ian.
Well, I think, you know, we all saw, you know, pictures from this winter of, you know, those heated bubbles and things like that. I know that for some restaurants, there were, I think for a lot of businesses, this sort of sped up their sort of need to, they wanted to make some changes anyway. And so this pandemic sort of propelled them to sort of make some changes that they were thinking about. You know, I was down in Provincetown just a couple of weeks ago for a story, and there were a couple of restaurants that had set up outdoor dining that they'd been meaning to, that they sort of had talked about. It had been sort of in their plans for a couple of years, and this, they finally got the allowance to be able to do that. And so I think you're seeing some of that. It's interesting, you know, just like within Provincetown, some of this comes down to sort of the what the business owners are comfortable with. So there was, restaurants were open, there was limited indoor dining, but there's a popular lunch spot called Farland Provisions, which is, makes really great sandwiches. It's a little general store. They were still doing window service, and this was just a couple of weeks ago. So it sometimes just comes down to, you know, what the business owner feels comfortable doing.
Yeah, I really see people in New England embracing outdoor dining. I just can say for myself, Ian, like I used to only do it when it was a really nice day. But now I think, okay, I'll just put on some extra clothes. And I think we're all getting a little hardier there. Let's take another call. This is Mary in Albany. Hi, Mary. You're on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My daughter has a four-year-old, or he will be 4 years old in July. And she wants to take him to Orlando, to Disney, and do an Animal Kingdom. She does have wilderness cabins, so we would be by ourselves as far as the lodging goes. And the park claims that they are only up to 35% capacity. Animal Kingdom is like a zoo. So would this be a safe place? She also wants to do like a character meal, because she really wants him. He's really into Mickey Mouse. there would be
great.
No point going if we don't meet Mickey Mouse. But what are the, I'm just concerned we're not really talking about doing the rides. She wants to do some outdoor eating and, like I say, the character meal. So what are the thoughts on doing a theme park like that with the number of people that are around?
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for calling, Mary. And Matt, I'll throw that to you. And, you know, most of the theme park stuff you do is outside, so maybe that's okay. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I think the considerations here are who is vaccinated. And because, again, if everyone in your party is fully vaccinated, obviously the four-year-old couldn't be, but the risk to that four-year-old is again, on a population level, is fairly low. But if your party is fully vaccinated, then the risk to you is fairly low. But, you know, it's not something that I would feel comfortable doing yet. I do want to see the rates come down. And so if you are, intending to do that, then I think what you really want to do is call ahead and find out how much of those activities that you're interested in can be and will be done outdoors. My limited experience with Disney is that there are plenty of opportunities to meet Mickey outside. And, you know, there, I think you're in a safe situation. The challenges, of course, become that even in an outdoor park like Disney, you're always going to be around crowds of people at the points at which you have to come in and out or take the transportation in and out of the park. And so those are the points at which you have limited control over your exposure. But again, if your party is fully vaccinated, except for the 4-year-old, the risk to you is fairly low. And so it becomes a really personal decision as to whether or not you're comfortable taking that risk. But I would encourage you to call ahead and find out how many of those things can be done outdoors and stick to as many of those as you possibly can.
Well, that relates to an email we got from Nina, who asks, is it safe to travel with kids on an airplane or visiting crowded places such as aquariums or beaches or restaurants? Nina says, I have a 2-month-old and a 3-year-old. My 2-month-old definitely can't wear a mask, and my 3-year-old is unlikely to be able to wear one for long periods of time correctly. So, Matt, you kind of addressed Nina's question with what you just said, you know, outdoors as much as possible, adults fully vaccinated as much as possible. Anything else to add based on Nina's email?
Yeah, just keeping in mind that the risk to the young is very low, but it's not zero. And we care deeply about our children, and we don't want to put them in harm's way. But at the same time, there are risks that we take when we drive cars. So, we do assume some risk. So it's I think it becomes really a decision of just whether you're comfortable with being in a situation where the risk isn't zero, but it's very low.
Well, speaking of theme parks and resorts, Veronica wrote to us, we were supposed to go to Disney World in 2020 twice. First, it was a big family trip in July. Then I found out I was pregnant, so we decided to do a short trip in May 2020. Yeah, Veronica says that didn't happen. We rebooked for April of this year. That didn't happen. Veronica says, we are now booked for next April in a theme park view room in the newly remodeled Polynesian Village Resort. Wow, Veronica, thank you for writing. We are going to take a very quick break. And when we come back, I want to ask all of you how the travel industry itself has changed given the pandemic and which of those changes might stick around. This is The Exchange on NHPR. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow, we take a look at election law trends across the country and talk about voting laws under consideration in the New Hampshire legislature. Join us for that conversation tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today, we're talking about summer travel and predictions for a strong domestic travel season. And Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you. Tell us how you're approaching travel this summer. Are you sticking close to home? Are you trying someplace further away? What questions do you have? Let us know. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org, or call 800-892-6477. Our guests are Matt Fox at the BU School of Public Health, Andrea Sachs with the Washington Post, and Ian Aldrich with Yankee Magazine. And all of you, we've been talking about how travelers themselves are changing their approach. Andrea, you first. How about the industry overall? What have you seen the most change in terms of how they do business? And I'm guessing there's a lot there.
What makes my heart flutter is that they have become so much more generous with cancellation policies, that now they understand that people need to cancel whether they're sick or they're just scared. And so the airlines, the hotels, cruise lines, the ones that are operating domestically are allowed, they have such flexible cancellation policies. So either refund or just changing the date to like sometime in the future when you feel better about traveling. So that I'm so grateful for, and I hope they don't go back to those really evil change fees.
What else, Andrea? What about travel insurance? Given the ease with which we can change our dates, are fewer people buying travel insurance?
No, more people. Definitely more people.
Really?
I never buy it. oh gosh, yeah. I'm like, nothing ever happens to me. And you know, what, fine, I'll work it out. So many people are. I mean, my suggestion first is find out what the cancel and refund policy is of all the different parts of your trip. So it's airline or train, hotel, any activities you signed up for. Like I said, I had this New York City trip. I had to cancel everything and reschedule everything, and everything went smoothly. I'm not paying a penny out of pocket. And they just transferred all of my reservations to 2 weeks later. So then, and also your credit card too, find out what your credit card policy is in terms of refunds. But with all that said, you should get travel insurance, because look what happened with COVID. People lost thousands and thousands of dollars. And the policies used to be this like really expensive add-on, you know, basically if anything happens, you know, I don't know, King Kong comes and swoops you out. Okay, we'll cover that. So they did away with that.
That's it.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like it was really extreme situations, but you paid so much more on top of an already expensive policy. And this time they've come around with something that's very specific to COVID and a pandemic. And so they had to adjust to reality, and they're offering this, which is really great. So typically they don't cover something that we already know about. It has to be a surprise. And this is not a surprise. So I would have people, you have to compare, go online, Square Mouth and all the other comparison sites, and try out different policies. But if you have an expensive trip or you're concerned at all, I would look into insurance.
Ian, what other major changes have you seen in, you know, sort of the travel and hospitality industry? Recognizing that this is a very broad question, but I'd love to hear what you're seeing, Ian.
Well, I think businesses that have had sort of an outdoor, some sort of outdoor connection to what they do, they've sort of enhanced that. They've sort of been, because there's been such a big desire to sort of tap into that. I look at a place like, there's a great berry and fruit orchard down in Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, called Apex Orchard. It's been in the same family for 200 years. And they've really been building out their retail component, you know, just making it more of a destination. And last year, it's just sort of exploded. And so they're enhancing their services even more in terms of, hay rides and things like that, and just kind of the different things that people can do there. So I think you're seeing sort of an enhancement of services.
Sure, an enhancement of services, Ian, sounds like you're saying, tied to the outdoors, no matter what the weather.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's a great Inn-to-Inn walking tour in southern Vermont that this group of inns have pulled together in the last couple of years, and I think there's been a big demand to do things like that. As you said, the parks, I know the AMC, their trails were overrun with visitors, and I think there's an expectation that there's going to be a big boom in that department again.
Matt, what do you hope members of this industry do? And I'm describing the industry broadly, you know, anything from an AMC hut to, you know, a hotel in Boston. What do you hope that people in the travel and hospitality industry do this summer to, you know, keep it safe for everybody?
Well, I think that as your other guests have pointed out, there have been so many adaptations already that I think have really facilitated being able to travel safely. But you know, I think that the biggest thing that many of the hospitality industry folks could really do to ensure safety is just to make sure that the regulations that they are that have been put in place continue to be followed. Because if you go into a restaurant that's still like a coffee shop or something that's still requiring masks, but the coffee shop is not enforcing those, you then have to make the decision as to whether or not you want to continue to go in there. So, ensuring that everyone is continuing to follow the guidelines, but particularly so that everybody can remain safe, and particularly those who can't get vaccinated can feel comfortable in spaces like, you know, hotels and lobbies and things like that, is really going to be helpful in terms of both keeping people safe, but also ensuring that people are willing to come back to places like that.
Here in New Hampshire, hospitality providers say they're having a hard time finding workers for the summer season. Ian, is that story holding true across New England? Because we're definitely hearing it in the Granite State.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, I think that there's been so much sort of uncertainty about what the summer was going to bring. And I think, you know, and especially traveling. I mean, if you are sort of on the fence about whether or not you want to make a trip somewhere, I think you're going to want to sort of decide whether or not you're going to do it in the next couple of weeks, because I think inn owners, restaurant owners, that, you know, their spots are going, they're going to be going fast. I think there's going to be sort of a real momentum to sort of begin traveling in the next few weeks as the comfort level to travel really kicks into high gear.
What about the workers, Ian? I mean, how are restaurants and, you know, cottages, hotels, how are they going to find enough people to provide the services that clearly people want?
I don't know.
Yeah. It's a $1 million question, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think they're hitting sort of familiar channels. I know last year, you know, in the White Mountains, there's a great reliance on having young kids from overseas come and work, you know, a lot of, teenagers or, you know, 20-year-olds that are European travelers that are just kind of backpacking around the world. They rely a lot on that. I don't know if they are going to be able to do that again this year. I know that, you know, things were so limited last year that they sort of were able to kind of work around it. But that is a real $1 million question.
Yeah. Andrea, how about nationally? Is there the same shortage of hospitality workers that we see here in our region?
My sense is yes, they're scrambling. I know a lot of, you know, summer jobs or amusement parks, and they don't have the capacity right now, and they don't need the staff at the moment. I think coming after Memorial Day, they will. They're really gonna amp up the number of people visiting. But right now it's so slow, so they really can't pay them. And if they're based on tips, it's really hard for the kids that are working at the ice cream shop and so forth. Plus, we still have restrictions for foreigners coming into the country. We still, I believe, I'm not really up to speed on this, but in terms of how many can come in on certain work visas, you know, the temporary summer work visas. With the Trump administration, they definitely cut down on those numbers. I think Biden wants to increase those numbers, but they haven't, the businesses haven't had the chance. They've been so inundated with COVID stuff, they don't know if they've had the chance to really bulk up their staff numbers. So I say be patient, tip heavily. Just good to be outside and doing something, but I do have a sense that they're going to scramble.
Well, and Andrea, you talked earlier about travel insurance. What advice do you have for people who have vouchers from last year's canceled travel plans? And they, you know, maybe still don't feel safe doing it, or maybe they have frequent flyer miles they need to use before they expire. More and more I'm hearing stories about people with miles and vouchers that the companies are saying, these are going to expire, folks. And the people are saying, not really sure I want to do that yet.
Yeah, they have extended, and it's unfortunate because if we knew then what we know now, we all should have demanded refunds, all of us. I ended up with a credit. I didn't even remember like what the number was. I had to look through my Gmail from March of last year, and I applied it, and somehow it worked. But I think it's important in these cases, you call and you just say, hey, I have this credit, I have this voucher, please just let me spend it. But it's important to note when it expires, because a lot of them were maybe a year from the time that you booked. Maybe they extended it another year, but time is moving really fast and they will expire. And in some cynical way, I think they hope that you forget to redeem them. So come on, people, redeem them, use them.
Yeah, it's tricky because last March when, you know, if a travel company said, well, we'll extend it till March of next year, you probably would have said, sure, no problem, because who knew? How long
and you also
is
know where to go.
Be.
You know, where do you go? Where do you feel safe going?
Right.
I think right now, Hawaii is like the safest place in the United States to go because they're still requiring a COVID test or quarantine. They're still having a mask mandate and they're really strict about it. Or even Puerto Rico and U.S. Virgin Islands, which is considered, you know, it's U.S. territory. And when you return to the States, you don't need a COVID test, but they're requiring visitors to fill out a health form. They require a COVID test. So those are options, but some people probably don't want to go there just yet because they have to go on a plane.
Right. Well, and like Matt,
like if you call them, you work with them, there's still a lot of compassion in the air.
Matt, I did have to ask you that. To fly or not to fly? I was talking to somebody last week who is going rather far, but they are driving because they don't want to get in a plane. As Andrea reported earlier, other people are jumping on planes, just looking at the TSA numbers. How are you as an epidemiologist weighing to fly or not to fly?
Well, it all goes back to are you vaccinated or not? If you are vaccinated and you're wearing a mask the entire time that you're on that plane, the risk to you is still pretty low, but it's not zero. So, you know, the calculation I think should be, if you feel comfortable that you can get to where you want to get to driving, that is certainly a better option than flying. I do want to go back to the question you asked earlier about the finding enough employees. And I do want to just remind everyone that the employees in the hospitality industry are the folks who can't avoid the exposure the way many of us can when we travel. And so we do want to really think about being careful around those employees to try and minimize their exposure. So if you're talking about flying, the air crew are not able to stay away from people the way that others can, and they have to be there for long periods of time. So just being respectful, wearing your mask, getting your vaccination so that you can help protect them is really what we want to be thinking about.
Well, and looking broadly, Matt, I mean, I hear you on, in terms of COVID, driving is safer than flying, but people get in car crashes all the time. So are epidemiologists sort of weighing that out?
Yeah, this is a really, it's a big field, but the challenge is that the risks are constantly changing around, how, depending on whether or not you're vaccinated, depending on how much COVID is circulating. And so there isn't a very easy answer to the question right now. But you are absolutely correct that certainly their driving is not a zero risk situation either. And so, you do want to keep that in mind. But I think, people often fear risks that don't make, that aren't intuitive to them. And COVID falls into that category. It's something that is maybe low risk, but it's scary and something that people can't really put a number to. And so I think, for people's own comfort, they will often accept the risk of driving over the risk of getting into a plane.
Because driving is familiar, Matt?
Exactly. And driving is something that they can they feel they have control over in a way that they don't when they're in an airplane. If I'm in an airplane, I'm around a lot of people. I don't have control over who goes where or whether they keep their masks on the entire time. If I'm in my car, I do. Obviously the risks from car accidents is not zero though. And that's something people do want to keep in mind.
Well, Ian, just to wrap up. Oh, go ahead, Andrea. Yeah.
Well, I was just going to say, I went to a theme park, going to Busch Gardens in Williamsburg last weekend, and I felt fine. Everyone's wearing their masks for the most part. On my way home, I got in a fender bender.
Oh. So, yeah, there you go.
Driving home, not as safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody thinks they're such a good driver and they won't have an accident, but guess what?
Exactly.
So, Ian, how do you think, just broadly, the travel industry, travelers themselves, might be permanently changed, even 5 years down the line? Are there changes that are happening now that you think will stick around, Ian?
I think this sort of reconnection with the outdoors is going to be the thing that remains with us. I think people have kind of rediscovered their connection to the natural world. And I hope it's something that stays. I think it works to our benefit on a lot of different levels, but getting out there and hiking and camping and cycling and just moving your body. And I think there's going to be an increasing number of businesses that cater to that. I think that's going to be really exciting to see. And in New England, I think it's a perfect playground for that sort of stuff to really blossom.
How about you, Andrea? Changes that you have been tracking over the past year that you think might be permanent?
I think before COVID happened, we were talking so much about over-tourism and about how places like New Orleans and even New York City and Barcelona and Venice were just overwhelmed with tourists. And now we've kind of cleaned the slate. And I think it's all about slow travel. It's thoughtful travel. It's being appreciative of what we had and lost and now we can regain. And I think hopefully we'll just be a lot more open to experiences and enjoying kind of the simpler things about travel. And rather than being in a rush and just going where the crowds go.
Yeah, a lot of Granite Staters said they really discovered some undiscovered beauty in their own backyards last year. So that's definitely a theme I've heard. How about you, Matt? Any permanent changes? Like, are people going to wear masks on planes forever? Because who wants to pick up a cold or a flu?
Yeah, I wish that were the case, but I don't anticipate that's going to be a long-term trend. It's unfortunately, it's uncomfortable to be wearing a mask for a long period of time. And people, eventually, I think once the pandemic dies down, are gonna lose that motivation to continue to do that. I'd like to see it because I think that it really would be a benefit. It would prepare us, should anything else come down the line. Hopefully we could head it off before it became an issue, but I can't say I think that it's going to happen.
Well, Matt, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you for helping us out.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Matt Fox. He's a professor of epidemiology at the BU School of Public Health. Andrea, it was really nice to meet you. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much. It was so great to be here. My dog was very, very grateful too.
That's Andrea Sachs. She is a travel reporter for the Washington Post. And Ian, good to talk to you too. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thank you. This was fun.
That's Ian Aldrich. He's senior features editor at Yankee Magazine. Today's show was put together by Exchange producer Jane Vaughn. Thanks, everybody, for being with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.